With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
You may already know that the Football Ramble have teamed up with audible.co.uk. to offer you a free audiobook of your choosing when you sign up for a free 1 month trial at audible.co.uk/footballramble. So if you want Why England Lose by Simon Cooper and Stefan Szymanski, I Partridge by Alan Partridge, or The Football Men, Up Close with the Giants of the Modern Game by Simon Cooper, then sign up at audible.co.uk/footballramble or choose from a range of about 60,000 other titles. The 30-day free trial means you can choose a free audiobook, which is yours to keep, whether or not you decide to cancel in the trial period. Go to audible.co.uk/footballramble and sign up now.
Hello, I'm Xavi Alonso and you are listening to the Football Ramble.
Yes, thank you, Jabby. It's the Football Ramble, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Marcus, and I've got two friends with me, Jim.
Hello.
And Luke.
All right.
I'm afraid Pete's not here, but he will be back soon enough at the start of the next season. But we're going to plough on and talk about the final. It's over. The Euros, it's finished.
A bit sad, really.
Isn't it?
It always is really sad the day after, isn't it? It's like Boxing Day.
We got the Community Shield to look forward to. No, we got the Olympics.
Yeah. That could be quite interesting.
Team Gibson.
But we are going to talk about the final, and then we will have the opening of the envelope.
The predictions.
The prediction. Yeah.
The most important part of any major tournament.
Yeah,
according to UEFA and the Football Ramble. Now, Spain won 4-0. Italy didn't deserve that, but my goodness, Spain were good, Jim.
They really were, weren't they? I think this will banish talk that they were boring. Because they had this in the World Cup as well. Like a lot of people said that they'd never really got out of second gear and they didn't play particularly well. And I think it's kind of fair enough, like compared to the heights we have seen from them. But I think, you know, people will forget that that was said about them in the semis and the quarter. And
of course, because
like
the rhetoric around it was never going to be remembered as much as the results are anyway,
of course,
moments on the pitch.
And obviously, I think it will also be forgotten that Thiago Motta had to go off injured.
Yeah.
So, you know, those two goals, it was just a very, very tired 10 men.
I think also the Spanish side, they don't concede goals.
No.
And so
makes it very hard to be beaten.
Exactly. And so when people say, oh, they're a bit boring. Okay, I understand all the 1-0s in South Africa, but if you don't concede goals, then you don't get the 4-3s and the 3-2s and all the rest of it. I mean, I don't think they've conceded a goal since they played Northern Ireland in 1982 or something ridiculous.
I think they haven't conceded a goal in an international knockout game since 2006.
It was France, I believe.
Zidane, I think it's called. The thing about them, to put the sort of change in their style to bed, is basically that I think on average they make a lot more passes per game than they used to compared to their World Cup games. And also that Xavi role is a bit further forward means they're not as sort of incisive from deep, I suppose. So that may be something to do with it.
Yeah, indeed. They got off to a good start, though. David Silva heading in.
Top corner
like
header.
V-shaped goal, wasn't it? With the ball over from Fabregas and the head in. It was just...
I thought it was one of the goals of the tournament.
Oh, it was wonderful.
The Xavi thread.
The slip.
It was, absolutely. Oh, no, it was Iniesta. Fabregas.
Xavi
was later. Yeah. Iniesta and Xavi just slips.
Yeah.
When does a slip become a thread?
It's one.
Well, that's a good point, actually. Yeah.
That is one footballer across two bodies, isn't it?
That's true. Yeah. No, I think a slip is just a sort of a general through ball.
Yeah.
Whereas a thread is through the eye of a needle, isn't it?
Yeah, okay, right.
And intended to be so the whole way.
Exactly. A thread is you can't defend against it.
Yeah.
It's so ridiculously good.
It's a sniper style sort of pass.
English players can do slips.
Yeah.
But it takes a Spaniard to do a thread.
Okay, right. Thanks for clearing that up.
That's all right.
Yeah.
I mean, the game was... I mean, would you say it was even up until the goal, or Spain?
Italy certainly started, really started off okay, didn't they?
Well, didn't they? They had more possession at one point after about, I think it was about 20 minutes or something like that. But obviously, it didn't last very long.
Yeah. Stop now, I'll go pens.
But, you know, there's only ever really one team. And Jordi Alba's goal was fantastic. And he's had a wonderful tournament. He's been a real standout player there. And obviously, he's off to Barcelona already.
Yeah,
so they're just getting more and more formidable.
Spain looked in the mood, didn't they?
Yes.
I mean, it would, you know, if you look back at the games, perhaps, you know, like we said against France, you go a goal up or whatever, just pass it, conserve your energy. I was a bit worried about Sabane because, obviously, against Portugal gave them a right old run for their money. But Spain didn't look tired at all. They looked up for it and they looked fresh. Yeah. I mean, to look fresh in the final, after how many... I mean, Xavi has played an average of 66 games over the last four seasons. A season, sorry.
That's incredible.
It's because he's always got the ball.
Yeah, exactly.
He's never tired. but they press... Obviously, they press very hard without the ball, but they rarely don't have the ball.
That's
they
right.
have the ball on average something like twice as often as the opposition.
Mm.
So, they're gonna, yeah, obviously, they don't need to chase as much. So that's why Italy got picked off, because the first 20 minutes is probably quite... Well, not easy, but it's realistic to keep up that intensity.
Yeah.
And then when you... Well, obviously, they were unfortunate in the last half hour. They went down to 10 men.
Chiellini went off.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. And that was a gamble by... Jim and I were saying earlier, actually, that was a gamble by Prandelli, because he knew he was sort of half fit and there was a chance that was going to happen. Mm. But I just think he thought he needed Chiellini in there.
Yeah. Also, with that, you know Cassano is going to come off. He absolutely will definitely have to come off. So playing another player who's... Well, there's a bit of a risk about him. It was a gamble. You know, unfortunately for them, it didn't work out.
Yeah, indeed. I did think Silva's goal was one of the best of the tournament.
That was superb.
What a move it was.
Yeah.
And it was a moment where a friend of mine pointed out that when the ball was played through to Fabregas, or what sort of played through, you know, and he went down the line against Chiellini, I think it was, he said an English player would have just fizzed that across first time. Mm. Whereas Fabregas...
Said
had
to the ball,
yeah.
Get on David Silva's head.
He had the confidence to think, I will take a touch here and not put it out of play or get tackled and just... knock it and onto Silva's head, but the through ball by Iniesta, huge strength, they've got so many strengths, Spain, but one of them is it's the weight of their passes.
Yes, absolutely.
And obviously the accuracy, but the weight of the ball is glorious. I mean, it's computer game stuff.
The weight of the ball Xavi's onto Alba's foot was absolutely perfect.
You can't, but it's so hard to defend against, because if it's ever so slightly overhit, it can go out of play, like Fabregas. If it's ever so slightly underhit, the defender gets it.
Yeah.
It's just sheer perfection.
It is. It's like, we've said it many, many times, it is like they've completed football. They've just absolutely mastered the physics of the game. They've just got everything absolutely bang on.
And it's interesting as well, because you could argue that they don't have the type of player like Balotelli, a bit more of a maverick. I know they've got great players, but do you know what I mean? Someone who, like Balotelli, a couple of times had a couple of digs from 25 yards. You couldn't imagine many of those Spanish players scoring a 25-yarder into the top corner, in off the bar, crashing in, because of the way they play.
I think they would see that as wasted possession.
Well, I think they would, because there's a sort of element of truth to that, isn't there? If you're sort of hitting a long ranger, there's always a element of hit and hope, and they've got a far more considered game plan than that. The play is always going somewhere. This is what we were talking about the last show, the sort of hive mind mentality they've got. There's always a plan, so you're not going to have players just sort of thumping it from miles out, although Xabi Alonso did try to score from the halfway line.
But it's kind of, it all comes,
he can have one of those.
Yeah, it's all saved for that occasion, isn't
yes.
it? They don't have a shot from 30 yards out in three games.
They get it all the way,
and Alonso unleashes it all in that moment.
I think that with this sort of not shooting for a long distance sort of thing, it's almost like they think if they kick the ball as much as they can. I said that on the show before, they'd be happy to go 0-0 in every game, because they know that, especially obviously because Italy were unfortunate, but especially in the last half hour, they just pull teams all over the place. You're so tired, they must be so tired to playing against them, because they've all got a shit. And what happens is, when they go down one flank, well, there's not really an opening because it's defended well, they just shuffle across to the other flank, and everyone defending has to reassert themselves on another angle, and it becomes, must come so sort of mentally tiring as well as physically.
But it's like coming up against, you know, Floyd Mayweather in a boxing match or something.
Yeah.
He keeps on getting the little digs in. He just keeps on going. It doesn't look tired, and you can't get him. Yeah, exactly. And eventually, you either have to go for it and open up, which teams do, and you'll be punished severely.
Yeah.
You know, in both senses.
Or you just
plug away and you come off second best.
So the question now is, can any international team step up to it? Because Spain have had weird losses in friendlies. They got beat 4-0 by Portugal,
England,
4-0 to Argentina, and lost to England. But obviously friendlies
are 4-1 against Argentina.
Well, you know, still it's a surprising result. Obviously, very, very different
They don't seem to care that much about friendlies, do they?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's more to bed in sort of newer players to see who can step up to the style, I would say. But, you know, is the way to beat Spain to do the same game, to play tiki-taka, or to try and do something to just get around it? Are we going to get a culture now in international football where teams are set up in a very negative way to try and nullify that? Because that's the zenith, isn't it? That's what you've got to aim for.
It's no coincidence that in the group stages against Spain, teams tend to seem to do better, or at least get goals, or at least keep it a little bit tighter, because they haven't necessarily got to win the game. Mm. When it comes to knockout tournament, when it's all or nothing, Spain, they don't even ever concede.
Well, it's Portugal. On another day, might have had that.
Yeah, but not that day. You know, I mean,
well, but Spain never beat them. Spain never even scored against them.
Yeah.
So
Spain still. I mean, a lot. As I said in the last show, a lot was made of that Portuguese performance, and it was because people weren't expecting it. It was made out to be a lot better than it actually was.
Oh,
I mean,
no,
Spain still led all the stats and stuff.
Yeah, of course. But what I'm saying is, it still ended 0-0 over 120 minutes. But we talk about Italy. You know,
must be pointed out as well, Marcus. Sorry to butt in there, but it is generally accepted, and I'd like to see that actual figures on this. If you're going to win a major tournament, you're going to have to win a penalty shootout at some
point. Oh, sure, yeah, no problem with that at all.
I don't think that's any sort of discredit to Spain that they had to do that.
Should Italy have set up 3-5-2 like they did in the group stage? Because that got them a lot of joy for the first hour of that game, which ended 1-1.
I think they should have. Abate coming back sort of made it a bit complicated, didn't it?
Maybe Chiellini's injury.
I was really. I mean, obviously he got to play a part in the end, but I was disappointed for Balzaretti. I think he had a very good tournament. I think he had a better tournament than Barzagli, and I'd have put Chiellini at centre half and Balzaretti at fullback.
Yeah,
but. Obviously, Chiellini got injured anyway, and so Balzaretti got to make an impression. I like Balzaretti just because he's not scared to go to ground. At one point, I saw he made 5 sliding tackles in 10 seconds.
There's no English Italian.
There's no clean shorts.
I thought
hindsight's a wonderful thing. I mean, of course, if he plays 3-5-2, they get beaten again, etc., etc. But Italy were quite narrow. They play very much through the middle, and so does Spain. But I suppose the difference was, if you play the 3-5-2, where they got joy in the first game is, you know, Pirlo and De Rossi's were often played big diagonals out wide, and the wing backs, the Italian wing backs, got a bit of joy, and could also watch those fullback runners coming. And you saw this from Jordi Alba's goal, that Spain, yeah, they do play it through the middle, but while Italy were quite narrow, Spain's fullbacks had a bit of room there.
With the 3-5-2 in the first game, from memory, I think had Maggio on the right wing back position and Giaccherini on the left wing back position. That was Giaccherini's first start for Italy.
That's right, yeah.
I think it was his first cap, in fact.
Yeah.
So it's a big ask. And think of how much joy Spain had down that left with Alba, and who's gone from sort of prospect to arguably the world's best left back in like 3 weeks. You know, and don't forget, he used to be a wide attacking player anyway. Those two on the left against one man, it's a big ask in a final, especially when he's got a little bit of a worry or two over some defensive personnel in terms of injuries.
Yeah.
And he also played Thiago Motta in that first game as well, who was obviously wasn't fully fit. So I think circumstances dictated, just through personnel, that he couldn't really gamble on that. I think he tried to go a little bit safety first.
Sure. And I suppose it was the system that won them the semi against Germany. So change that too much, people go, hang on a minute. You
know? Yeah. And there's no science behind this, but it just, I don't know if you guys got the same impression, but I just thought it just had the air of just a game too far for Italy. When you often see in big tournaments, you see a team get to the semis or something, and they never get beyond the semis. It's just too much for them. I just don't think, looking back on it now with hindsight, which is obviously a lot easier, they ever really were going to win it, because Spain just knew. Spain just knew, didn't they?
Absolutely. But then, you know, when Di Natale came on, had a couple of chances, particularly the second one, he puts that away. You know, I still think Spain would have won, but it's 2-1. Italy have still got 11 men on the field.
I just think Spain did have that extra motivation of going on to be the best ever, and they do not look bored of winning, do they? That trophy celebration at the end with those adorable little Spanish toddlers running around, it's just wonderful. You know, you can see how that would be an incredibly addictive feeling, and you'd want to repeatedly assert your sort of brilliance and dominance.
And there's also, to people talk of the hunger, maybe we mentioned it a little bit at the start of the tournament, just pick on what you're saying, Jimbo, it's like, there's always something to focus on, isn't there? There's always something new you can do. Even when they've won both those big tournaments, they were looking towards being the first European team to do this sort of historic, unprecedented treble, which they were focused on. I mean, I don't know what their motivation will be for 2014. It'll be very difficult for them to win it there. But
no one in the modern era has retained the World Cup. I know Italy did it in the 30s, but you know, I mean, that will be their focus, won't it?
It's never ending.
Yeah,
and look at the
team they'll have
and European sides. Obviously, Spain did it in South Africa, but European sides had tended not to win the cup outside of Europe.
Yeah.
So. I mean, Spain will now think, obviously, they're the best team in the world, one of the best teams of all time, perhaps the best. Let's go to Brazil. And really, really make sure that there's no doubt in anybody's mind that we're the best. And that is the stage, isn't it?
If you look at someone like Sergio Busquets, he's like 23 or something. Mm. He won so much. I think he's won everything now.
Bastardo.
Yeah. what did you think of Balotelli's performance?
It was very tough going for him, as it was for all of Italy. And
I think it sounds like you mean the country, but I think that's fair. Yeah. That must have been an absolute slog of a game to watch. Yeah.
Even though he was incredibly miserable throughout, I thought Mark Lawrenson had a good point where he said that the trouble for Italy is they're so hurried in possession, they're looking down at the ball. Whereas you want Pirlo to get the ball and look up and see the game like he did against England and even a bit against Germany. He couldn't do it against Spain because they were hurrying him. And so every time Balotelli did get the ball, and I felt for him a bit because it was obviously slim
pickings.
Exactly. I he did have a go, and I thought fair play to your pal. Actually, you know, he's 25 yards out of goal. He thinks, come on, I'll have this. You know,
someone's got to do something.
Exactly, and I thought that was perhaps one of the only ways they were going to get a bit of joy. As I say, Di Natale did have a couple of opportunities, so I thought he did okay.
I think in the circumstances, I think he did all he could.
Yeah.
But the Di Natale thing, I think, you know, you're already 2-0 down, you've come off the bench, it's difficult to get into the game. A lot more pressure on you because of the lack of time you're given by Spain.
Yeah.
It's a different ball game to coming on in the first game or whatever, you know, knowing there's a lot of the tournament in front of you. So that was probably the difference. I thought, I mean, speaking on your Lawrenson thing, so that's one good point Lawrenson made in 3.5 weeks. We're giving him one good point.
It's not of averages.
It's not a bad return for your life.
He's watching the best team ever.
Yeah.
And he still can't enjoy himself.
No.
He's in a beautiful city like Kiev. Yeah. It's the final of the Euros.
Doesn't like football, does he?
Right, let's get this done.
Do I?
Quick, we start. Quick, we finish. He spent the last 10 minutes talking about how he won money on Torres being the top scorer.
Seriously, though, he sounds like a man who just doesn't like football anymore. Mm. Just bored of it. Just bored of watching it, bored of talking about it, bored of thinking about it.
It reminds me of an old person. One of those, and most old people are awesome. I like old people, but some of them are really bitter that they're not young anymore.
Yeah.
And he had this sort of air of a bloke sitting on the front lawn of an old people's home just shouting obscenities at young lovers. You know, you know what I mean?
Did you see when he... Balotelli, he said something and he went, oh, well, that's pot and kettle... etc.
I know that my favourite one was Alan Shearer after the game going, this Spanish team have had a lot of success.
They probably have both. Judging by their kids running around the pitch, I think they probably have.
Yeah. There's the proof.
Yeah.
A lot of people moaned about Spain not starting a striker in a number of the games. Well, it was their man who ended the Golden Boot winner, wasn't it? Torres.
He had to get a goal and an assist, didn't he? Which seems very unlikely, but he so calmly did.
But funny enough, when he cut that back to Juan Mata, who played 4 minutes of the tournament and gets a goal in the final, the Chelsea link, I thought to myself, you should have put it in, man. You're the one top scorer, and funnily enough, that act still got him.
It's like Spain. It's almost like you expect, and rightly so, to say, "You're moaning about us not playing a striker, but one of our strikers is still top scorer." Fuck off! Look at your own lot. Yeah, come back to us when you've sorted your own house out.
The rest of the world.
It really is true.
You don't want to see us in third gear, all right?
Yeah. That's it. Oh my goodness, I mean, it is absolute cheek, isn't it? I mean, you're not playing a striker.
Fabregas,
we're the best team ever.
Fabregas played a huge role in the first goal, so obviously it's worth it.
Fabregas, I think, has been great.
Fabregas will step up to Xavi's role. I think Iniesta will just continue the dominance.
Yeah. He's been shuffled around and playing here bits and pieces where he can because he's an adept footballer.
But that's just going to make him better in the long run.
Exactly. Once Xavi retires, he'll slot in there.
Thiago Alcantara. Yeah, you know, he can slot in.
I mean, Muniain's not even in the squad.
I don't think Alcantara is, Thiago.
No, he's not. No. And then there's, I mean, Navas is only going to get better.
He's best player.
Yeah, I know. I know, it's amazing, isn't it? It is amazing.
I mean, there's players coming through at Barcelona every year as well that seem to just be stepping up to it. It's just absolutely terrifying.
Torres' finish was decent. They Buffon got a hand to it. The Jordi Alba goal, he gave him the eyes. It was like Rooney in 2004 against Croatia, was it? When he's in on goal and he gives the keeper the eyes and he dives the wrong way and he slots it the other way. Alba did that. It was an English goal.
Again,
you're welcome, Spain.
What I love about Jordi Alba's goal is is that
express pace?
That's well, that as well. That's their left back, yeah. who made a run from his own half, thinking I can get on the end of this,
yeah.
because he knows his man's gonna slot him.
Yeah,
and the touch,
yeah.
was just Bergkamp-esque, you know. And the finish, he finished like that, and you think that's a fullback, you know. Yeah. What in England, a fullback's just not taught that skill.
I've never seen a game where I've known it was over at 2-0 before,
yeah,
to
yeah.
that degree. It was yeah. like, it just didn't feel like a contest after but, that. And it was still enjoyable because Spain were so brilliant to watch, but it was just like, okay, yeah, we were wrong. This was never going to be tight. This is.
But when Albert did that sort of burst of pace
yeah.
and he scored.
He went through three men.
Yeah, and the camera cut to, I think it might have been Bonucci, but it may not have been. And he's some sort of some Italian defender. And it was like he was looking like, I mean, what was that? What do you want me to do with that? Because he had about 10 yards on him and he steamed past
yeah,
him.
And you've got a feel for Buffon as well because. Yeah. I mean, especially the first one. And it's always very frustrating for a goalkeeper when the goal is scored in such a way that they can't dive for it or they can't sort yeah. of go for it, you know. Or a one-on-one's very frustrating for a keeper. It's like, oh, I've just got no chance.
I don't want to take anything away from the goal because it was an excellent goal. You're both right in saying that. But I think a natural left-back stops that. I think Chiellini got caught with his pants down.
Possibly.
Yeah,
possibly.
I think that wasn't the best start. It was a bit of a gamble to play him there anyway, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And people say he tends to go walkabout a little bit when he's playing centre-back, but I think centre-back's his best position.
I think so.
Yeah.
Well, you look at him for Juventus.
A natural left-back, would stop that.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, talking about Spain's formation, Del Bosque, again, a lot has been made of him playing Xabi Alonso and Sergio Busquets behind Xavi. Mm-hmm. Whereas in 2008, I think it was Senna by Xavi, so they just had one stopper, if you like.
Yeah.
And they did this in 2010 World Cup. They started with those three in the centre.
Final.
Yeah, in the final, sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's worked, hasn't it?
Mm.
I mean, Del Bosque, he just must sit there when people criticise him going...
Yeah, exactly.
A friend of mine sent me a text during the game that just said, Vicente Del Bosque, part man, part walrus, all cop.
Yeah, yeah, he doesn't like a cop.
He didn't really
like,
understand it, he but looks I loved
like,
it.
He looks like a sort of cop...
With a lot of cock.
Yeah. Marcus.
Sorry. Come on, Marcus.
He looks like a sort of cop that in one of those films where Euro 2012 was like his last job. He's like a week away from retirement. He's like, I'm too old for this shit.
Yeah,
but all right, I'll do it. I'll one more job.
He's just too brilliant to do anything else.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
They need him too much.
Del Bosque, I was looking at his first job was at Real Madrid B in 1987. So, and, you know, he's an older chap.
Yeah.
And so he, you know, out of the vast majority of his managerial reign, he's played with strikers,
yeah.
this whole sort of tiki-taka business, is still relatively new in the Spanish game. I mean, it was sort of early 90s where the coaching revolution happened. So, for an older guy who's been in the game for so many years, has won Champions Leagues and all the rest of it, for him to adapt his philosophy, adapt his formations, and move with the times, he has to take so much credit.
But the players make it easier for him.
Of course they do, but if that manager, you know, if he was a bit more rigid and so on and so forth,
Didn't let them express themselves.
Well, we've seen Capello do that. He always liked a sort of a 4-4-2 and this and a that. Del Bosque has let this fluidity just run wild on the pitch, but in a structured way, if you know what I mean. Mm. He has to take great credit for that, sure.
Yeah, I mean, well, he takes great credit as being, you know, a manager who now has won pretty much everything there is to win. So, I mean, he's won the World Cup, he's won the European Championships, he's won the Champions League. You know, he can sleep very easy at night. You know, but all I'm saying is, you know, he's got very, very good players who all subscribe wholeheartedly to his system and subscribe. I know it's changed slightly since Aragonés, but they subscribed to that system, born out of Barcelona and born out of Aragonés' Spain, and he's inherited, you know, a decent proper players. You know, I mean, when you said earlier about what's the best way of combating Spain and does everyone take on this sort of tiki taka mantle? There's no way England could do that. There's probably only a handful of teams that could do that.
Germany, perhaps.
Holland, Germany, and Brazil, probably.
But you can't do that. You have to coach it for years and years and years.
Yeah,
they did this in like the early 90s, I say, and now they're reaping the rewards.
Mm.
It takes that kind of long, you know.
Well, yeah, no, you do. Luke and I were talking about this earlier as well. You do get people angry, sort of cab drivers phoning in 606 mainly, going, oh, they always talk about revolutionising the youth setup in England. They say they did it a couple of years ago. We're rubbish again. It doesn't take 2 years,
yeah,
does it?
Yeah.
It's not about making Jack Rodwell and Jack Wilshere better.
No.
It's about making people who are sperm now better in the future.
Well, the other sort of
if
example,
indeed they have really implemented.
That remains to be seen, I suppose. Yeah. But I mean, you're talking about the thing in the early 90s. I mean, Germany did it at the turn of the century, didn't they? So it's taken them pretty much, and they haven't won anything again.
Yeah, I mean, Germany's been a bit quicker.
Yeah,
but they still. But
Germany are a very young side, aren't they? So they've been fast tracked.
Yeah, but Spain are a young side. I mean, you know, 4 years ago at the World Cup. But, yeah, they have been fast.
2 years at the World Cup.
Hmm? 4 years at the previous European Championships, in 2008. But one thing I love about this Spanish squad is that they all love it.
Yeah.
They are all in it together. From the players who start to the subs to the staff, they're all in it together. There's no, I mean, Juan Mata played a few minutes of the tournament. Hmm. You know, got scores. He doesn't turn around and do a Balotelli going, oh, yeah, see that? That was what he loves it. Yeah. It's like he's, you know, been playing throughout the game. Llorente at the end runs on the pitch and is celebrating. Now, he'd be, you know, understandably a little bit annoyed because Torres and Negredo have played and he hasn't. Yeah. He's had much better seasons. Well, not much better than Negredo, but he's certainly had better seasons, I would argue. And Pepe Reina is the ultimate Spanish fan.
Yeah, he's like their hype man.
He is. It's glorious. I mean, you think about England.
He's their Flavor Flav.
Yeah. He is. He really is. Think about England's goalkeepers. How many England goalkeepers... I don't want to be number two. I don't want to be number three.
Ben Foster didn't even watch it.
Exactly. Pepe Reina can't get enough of it. Yeah. Yeah. He is the ultimate fan.
But winning breeds that, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
But how is that different than John Terry taking all the plaudits?
No. Of course it's different. Because
Terry's taken it all for himself.
No, because John Terry's stripped off to the kit and all that kind of stuff. Whereas Reina and all the subs have ran on because that's what you do as a team.
Yeah.
But Victor Valdez is playing second fiddle to his great rival. Play for great rival clubs. And Valdez is loving it.
Yeah. No, it's great to see. I agree. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and so that kind of, you know, it's all about Spain winning.
Yeah,
and it doesn't. You can imagine them all in the room together saying, "It's all about the country winning, and whichever one of us gets picked and scores the win goal, or whatever, it doesn't matter. It's all about the country winning."
Do you think they saw Rafa Nadal get smashed out of Wimbledon by a relative unknown and thought, "Whoa, hang on, Spain can't be losing things."
No.
Maybe that's what gave them the extra motivation to just smash.
I know that Nadal's well into his football, so maybe
he's a huge fan, isn't he? Miguel Angel Nadal is his uncle, isn't he?
Yeah, that's right.
Big Real Madrid fan, I think, Nadal is, isn't he?
Did you see how emotional the Italian players were at the end? Like, it's felt really sad for them.
Pirlo
and Buffon and Bonucci.
Pirlo kind of knows that's probably his
last go. Yeah,
maybe the next World Cup. Well, he's won a World Cup.
Let's not be too sorry. Plenty of silverware otherwise. There's a bit where Balotelli was sort of just laying down. I think during the game, I think he'd just been tackled or he's on the floor for some reason. He looked really sad. And then his expression just seemed to say, oh, whatever.
Did you see him storm off at the end?
Yeah, but he stormed back on.
Yeah, but
it wasn't storming. He was called in for a drugs test.
Much was made of that.
He called in for a drugs test.
It's an easy story, isn't it?
It's just like, oh, come on. Should he just be like, oh, well, not to worry. I mean, I know you express disappointment.
It's fair enough.
Yeah, I know you can express disappointment in different ways, but... he's frustrated. They've just got tonked by, I think, is it a record margin for a major final? He's going to be pissed off.
2 points on that, right? The way that he was treated by Hanson Shearer in the studio beforehand was a disgrace. One, they seemed to make out before the game that he didn't really care about football. And then at the end of the game, they said, oh, at least he's tried hard today. When he always tries hard. Tell me another 21-year-old striker could lead a line on his own, pretty much, with Cassano dropping deep, obviously.
And scores a brace to knock out Germany.
Exactly.
Yeah. The much-fancied Germany.
And then he storms off after the game, because he clearly cares loads about it. Now, I know he's calling for a drugs test, which not much was made of that anyway. So clearly he does care. It means a lot to him. So which way around do you want it? You can't have it both ways.
Hanson said before the game that if he scores 10 hat-tricks in the Premier League this season, maybe he'll reconsider his opinion of him. It's utterly ridiculous. It's pathetic.
Yeah.
Hanson's got to grow up there. If there's an issue between someone and Mario Balotelli, and the person who doesn't have to grow up is Mario Balotelli,
then you're in trouble. Yeah,
something
is
badly wrong.
Yeah.
Shearer was the same. He's always saying, oh, he's not really done much at international level. It's like, he's 21
it
years
was worse
old.
Than
what
that,
have you
Jim.
Done at that time?
Jim, it was worse than that. He actually said he's never achieved anything in football. And then Lineker pushed him on it and he changed it to international football because Shearer then realised that Balotelli's won 3 league titles and a Champions League, more than what Shearer's done his whole career.
Sorry, Marcus, to interrupt,
but we regularly get annoyed on the show about the sort of the seeming lack of knowledge, but also indifference to the fact that there's football outside of Europe. And I think the BBC have just...
Premier League.
Of course, that's what I mean. But I think the BBC have sort of had their pants pulled down a little bit by the sheer force of irritation at that. Because, people have been really, really angry about it. And Shearer and Hanson have been the sort of... And Laurenton as well have been the major culprits of that. I think Lineker's been fine. I think Dixon's all right.
I feel a bit sorry for Lineker in a way. And why should I feel sorry for a 51-year-old who looks that good? But it's almost like he's not got much to work with.
Yeah,
and as you say, he pushed Shearer on that, and that's good. And I'm sure he'd probably like to do that more, but it's a bit difficult if you're mates. You don't want to stitch someone up on
I think it's more of a case of that, you know, they've got a certain amount of time to work in. They've got to get a certain amount of things covered. They've got VT inserts to use. It shouldn't be a mates thing. It should just be a case of, you need to do a job properly. But, I mean, there's not always enough time, is there? I read that Lineker pushed Shearer on that because he was told by producers that he needs to, because there's a lot of public pressure around Laurenson as well.
I think there's a real lack of respect for football in general with that sort of attitude, and I think they need to sort it out. You know, they're a public broadcaster,
of course,
they've got to treat the audience with a little more respect. Okay, I understand that you have to cater for people that don't really know a lot about what's going on outside the game, but you've got to, in that case, sort of educate or inform, or at least acknowledge that, you know, there's stuff outside of England that's brilliant.
Mm. Absolutely. And it comes off,
but not much stuff.
No,
come
exactly.
on,
that's
obviously silly. let me say something mildly potentially controversial. Would Germany versus Spain been the ideal final?
No, I don't think. In retrospect, no, I think the two best teams in terms of what actually happened in the tournament rather than on reputation were in the final.
Would you go along with that, mate?
Yeah, I mean, Germany, they did well to get out of that group. Obviously, we thought they were going to kick on a gear. I mean, the fact that they only had to play Greece in the quarterfinal didn't really help them, because Greece were no match for them, really. We expect them to kick up another gear, as I say, against Italy. And Italy proved themselves to be the better team. So, I mean, Italy deserved to be there. I mean, it's hard to look back on a tournament.
Yeah.
I don't really see where Italy have been lucky to be there. That's the thing. Yeah. If I look back on it in hindsight and thought, oh, Italy were a bit lucky to be in the final. Say Italy got a lucky last-minute own goal or something, or won on penalties after being outclassed for 120 minutes, then maybe. But Italy deserved to be in the final, yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. You know, the Germans were criticising their players for not singing the national anthem against Italy in the semi-final. It's nice to know it's not just England.
Yeah. The German press isn't a million miles away from ours. It's that newspaper, Bild, which is very, very much like the Sun.
Yeah.
Right, so.
Now then, ladies and gentlemen, we've come to the moment.
It's time.
It's time to open up the envelope sealed with the shiny and check out how wrong we can be.
Those long-term listeners will remember that last time for the World Cup, I predicted England to get to the semi-final. So
yeah.
That's the sort of form you can expect.
Indeed. The shiny's off.
Oh.
Here we are, hands out.
Right, so Pete's not here, so shall I do Pete?
You read off Pete. So what we'll do is we'll go through the categories one by one, mm-hmm. and we'll go around the room. Mm-hmm. So, Jim, start us off. Who did you have down for winner?
Germany.
Oh. Okay, incorrect. Luke, who did you have down?
Spain.
Did you?
Yep.
All right, 1-0 to big Lukey Moore.
Yeah. What have you gone?
I appear to have spelt Spain correctly. I thought everyone's going to go...
He's squirming. He's squirming.
Literally squirming.
I thought everyone's going to have Spain or Germany. And I was watching, and I've enjoyed Press Pass on ESPN.
Just get on with it.
And I was listening to Big Shaka Hislop.
Oh, that's your first mistake.
And he can... I'm really... Holland.
Yes.
Oh no.
It's the first big bollock that's been
dropped. Not the last.
I thought, I went on a punt, I listened to Big Shaka, and apparently later on I found during the tournament that he has this curse: whenever he says a team's going to win, they lose dramatically. So I picked the team that only Ireland had a worse record.
Pete went for Germany as well.
Okay, so
I'm the only person to get one right there.
Okay, top scorer, Jim.
Robin van Persie.
Well, he got one.
Yeah.
Luke?
Robin van Persie.
Okay, you got one. Karen Benzema.
Oh, you were an absolute shocker here.
There are testicles all over the studio floor.
I love
both of them.
We spend the whole season trying to build up our reputation as sort of serious, decent sort of football people.
Down at the House of Cards.
Oh, right, yeah. Pete's gone for Huntelaar, which is only just about as worse as Benzema.
Yeah.
At least Huntelaar wasn't starting every game.
Yeah, and he never played as many games, so I've come off worse. Yeah. Dark horse, Jim.
I went for France, whereas in something else I wrote, I picked Italy. Why didn't I just do that again? Yeah. Why didn't I have the courage of
my
conviction?
For winner, I didn't go for Holland in something else. But yeah,
I suppose dark horses are kind of...
it's not France, Luke.
Yeah. I went for Poland, but I think we're a bit unlucky to get out.
First round.
Fine.
I went for Italy.
Oh, did you?
So a bit of respectability needed.
A bit of pride restored. Yeah. Yeah.
Pick up my knee nuts.
Gordon Bennett.
And right. Pete went for France, so that's another shocker.
No,
by
no.
To the mayor there.
Well, they got the quarterfinals, so it's not that bad.
Yeah.
Not a dark horse.
So yeah, so now we came up on top there. England.
The only thing I wanted to say, by the way, just before you move on, is I'm not sure you can have France written as a dark horse.
No. No, I'm not counting that.
No, good. You should. Well, they're not dark horses anyway. They're big nations.
No, nobody backed them to win.
You said that about Italy.
I disagree with that.
Anyway, I'm not going to say that because
if France had won, it would have been a surprise.
Now, next category. England will reach the
quarterfinals.
Correct.
Well done, Jim.
Luke.
Quarterfinals.
And I had quarterfinals as well.
Pete had group stages. Laughing at Pete when he's not here is almost as good as laughing at him when he is here.
Yeah, exactly, It's a good substitute.
Yeah.
Total cards. What was the total cards?
The official total cards for the entire tournament was 126, both yellow and red.
Jim, what you got?
I went for 85. I'm not sure what my...
A little bit low, Luke.
130.
Very close.
Not bad, four out.
I went for 100.
Okay. Pete's gone for 36. I'm not making this up either.
Is he trying to make us laugh?
I'll take a photo of this and put it on Twitter later. So Pete was 90 out. Dear,
that's more than my whole prediction out.
Yeah.
Okay, Jim. Total goals.
I went for 91.
91.
And what was it?
The total amount of goals was 76.
Well, 91, not too
I was expecting there to be more hammerings than there were.
Luke?
72.
Ooh,
four
very
out
close.
Again.
I went for 90. So closer than Jim.
Pete's gone for 43.
Did he know what we were, you know, making predictions for?
I can see on his red pen he's crossed out 37.
He was not looking forward to this tournament, was he? He did not have high hopes.
He was predicted like one goal a game.
What did he cross out 30? Not that. No, it's stupid.
It's too low.
There'll be about six more.
Oh, poor old Pete. Brilliant.
Poor old Pete. So I think you got the best of that, Luke.
Yeah, four out on the cards, four out on the goals, and two right overall. That's not too bad, is it?
Well, yes, I got two right overall. I mean, I had a shocking start, and I ended well. I got Dark Horse, and England will reach the quarterfinals.
I mean, Dark Horse, Italy's the ultimate Dark Horse answer there.
Yeah. So, between us... We did okay.
I did better in the World Cup, which is all I care about, really.
Yeah. There we are. Right then. Well, let's look back briefly over the tournament, which was a great tournament.
Yeah, it was.
It really was.
It was brilliant.
And it was hosted very well, despite Panorama's best efforts.
It was hosted very well. Our experiences of being out there were very positive, and the experiences we got from watching on television were too. I think that it goes to show you that, I mean, that's 2 Euros in a row. We've had a really good time of it. And it's a real shame it's going to be bumped up to 24 now, because I think that's going to lower the quality of it. I really do.
Yeah. I think so, but you never know. You never know what UEFA can toss up.
It seems unlikely that it'll be better for having worse teams in it, though.
It's in France next time around, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, it is, yeah, absolutely.
In 2016.
Yeah.
I mean, straight from the off, I thought the opening game was great. 1-1.
Yeah.
Sending off, penalty miss. Mm. Yeah. That kind of set the tone,
nice
really.
Heady days of, like, 3 weeks ago. It does feel like ages ago, doesn't it, that game?
It's like a whole season condensed into like a
reasonable
period.
Yeah. Russia won a game 4-1. Remember that?
Yeah.
Alan Dzhigoyev, Russian called Alan. Big fan of that.
Yeah. One of the games of the tournament, England-Sweden, we obviously got to go and visit as well.
I think that's obviously a highlight for us. Yeah.
I think my highlight was our second celebration of Danny Welbeck's goal when we realised he'd meant it.
That was
beautiful.
That was the thing about
the England-Sweden goal was a typical game between two sort of average teams where it's like the quality was so poor that it was just, anything can happen here.
It's a little bit pinball.
Yeah.
But that's England standard, isn't it? You know, sort of the Swedes and Ukrainians, you know. But what about some of the goals? I think big Andy Carroll's header is up there.
It's a beauty.
I think that, you know, the other two goals in that game are actually better than that. The
Not
other two England goals.
Yeah. Oh, now Walcott's very lucky.
It's a swinger.
It flew in.
It did fly. It literally flew in.
Floated.
Flew.
All right. Well,
we could go on all day.
Repeating the same one.
I thought it was more aesthetically pleasing.
The goal that really sticks in my mind was the Sylvester Varela goal against Denmark to win it a few minutes from the end.
The air shot
to control it and then rifled it in.
Yeah, and that was one of the games of the tournament as well.
Yeah, that was probably the game of the tournament for me.
Do you think so?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah, right up.
Blazhkowski's goal as well. It was absolutely superb.
It's like he scored that on behalf of an entire nation.
Yeah. Against Russia, was it?
Yes.
Glorious finish.
I'll tell you what, though, Italy-Germany was one of the games of the tournament as well.
Yeah, I think that was probably my favourite game.
I think because that was quite a surprise, wasn't it?
Mm.
You didn't expect that to happen. Zlatan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Zlatan got in like a lot of people's team of the tournament.
Only.
And I'm not arguing with that, but a guy who went out on the group stage just showed how well he performed.
Yeah, I think he's the third top scorer in Euros history now.
Really?
With six goals, yeah.
Yeah, he scored a great one against
never
France.
Never done it on a big stage, though.
Exactly.
No. He's still waiting for that. What a goal against France, Ethan.
That was a beauty, yeah.
And Balotelli second in the semi-final.
Yeah.
Was the big thumping top corner that we were waiting for.
Yeah.
And only 2-0 in the tournament.
Yeah, we had to wait all the way through to the quarterfinals to get a 0-0, which is amazing.
Thank you, England.
To get a nothing good result.
Ireland's fans... Let's patronise. No, I'm only joking. But it was a fantastic tournament. And to be there, as you say, was brilliant. And I thought you summed it up quite nicely, Jim, when we didn't visit Kiev, we visited Euro 2012.
Really, I'm sure any fan that listens to the show that has been to a major tournament would agree with that as well. Like, and the World Cup felt a little bit like that, but we weren't there during the group stage as well. Mm. So it felt that the presence of it was less, even though it was still absolutely everywhere. But where we were in Kiev, we're right in the middle of it, right by the fan parks, just football was absolutely everywhere. And it was great. It was well appreciated. It was like a carnival of football, and it was really, really well put together, and a credit to it. I think, you know, it's easy to become a little bit disillusioned with football because of the way the game's going, the way the money teams are dominating it. But I think
this is why
Euro 2012 has been such a success, because it's brought the romance back. It was a really romantic tournament, and that is another reason why I'm really sad that it's the 16-team format is going, because it might dilute that, and you might not get the quality that we've had. Because I can't remember. There's not been many bad games. I don't think there's been a single bad game. There were a couple of, you know, the quarterfinals that were a little more cagey than there were in the group stages. But generally, the entertainment was really, really good.
But with 24 teams, Scotland might get through, and the magnificent Gorgie boys could be represented.
Yeah, that's true.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think this summer was really about the group stages and the knockout stage were very separate. I mean, the group stages were quite swashbuckling, and the knockout stage became almost like a little bit more interesting than entertaining for a bit, until we got through to Germany. Greece was very entertaining, and the final was very entertaining, but the other games were a lot of them were quite interesting to watch.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Swashbuckling entertainment, you know, but I think that's always going to be the case.
They're the games that people and inevitably, you know, like with the tennis at the Wimbledon and the Olympics and all, people who don't necessarily watch the sport get involved.
Yeah,
but they often get involved when it is the group stage, when it gets a bit tense, and that's when it does get tense and it's more of a tactical kind of thing and interesting, as you say. And people go, oh, this is not that great, you know.
But what do we think of sort of England's prognosis then, like sort of going forward?
Hodgson said this is a long-term job. This is not about Euro 2012. It's about England in the future. So it was interesting. I read an interview with Danny Murphy, who, of course, knows Hodgson very well, having played under him at Fulham. And he said he thought Hodgson did the right thing the way they set up at the tournament. You know, you come in quickly, you've not got long with the players, and so you've got to have some kind of system. And he said, but going forward, you know, England should play a 4-3-3. You've got to have three midfielders. Not Rooney dropping deep, you've got to have three midfielders.
Gary Neville said that for years, hasn't he?
He has, yeah. And he said, you know, Hodgson, hopefully this is true. He said, Hodgson, he's too intelligent and he's too good a coach not to see that. And he expects Hodgson will do that in the future.
Well, that's encouraging.
I hope he's right.
Because my biggest fear for England under Hodgson, I think he's the right man. He's progressive enough in terms of the overall 360 degree view of the whole setup. He cares enough about this sort of coaching side of it to bring us through, hopefully, a lot more players. But my biggest fear for him is that he's and I'll take what Danny Murphy said on board, obviously, because he knows him a lot better than I do, but my biggest fear is he rigidly sticks to this 4-4-2, and he has done for quite a long time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's going to be difficult, because he's been traditionally one of the biggest supporters of this sort of English way of playing, which he sort of exported to Scandinavia very early on. He needs to. It's very old for him. He's a very old man to be doing that.
Yeah.
To change his philosophy around.
Capello did it though. Capello did start to play.
Yeah, that's
different
true.
System with England. You know.
Key thing for me as well is older players have to go. If they're not going to be available for Brazil, don't have them in the squad for the qualifiers. Mm. Because, you know, I think we do have quality enough to get through the qualifying process without sort of the older heads. But I just think, what's the point? You know, you've got to give these players that we're going to hope to step up in Brazil the platform to then get comfortable within the setup, get to know what international football is all about.
I absolutely agree with you. I think, and also just to extend, sort of expand on that slightly, it's no coincidence that the teams that are big achievers in Europe, Germany, Spain, Italy, you know, they're not afraid to. Prandtl has completely overhauled how Italy have played. He's brought young players through. He's had a fresh start for everyone.
Germany have brought through so many young players. You know, that, I mean, Klose will be off now, and Gomez is still young enough, and they're bringing young players through all the time. And Spain, they've got a young
it's a production line.
Yeah, and Spain also, by the way, the thing that ties into this is that Del Bosque is not afraid to bring off Xavi Iniesta or bring off
whoever, that's right.
And that's the key thing. You've got, as you touched on earlier, Marcus, it's all about how Spain do. It's not about how these players do. So he'll bring Xavi off if he's not being effective, or he'll bring a big player off, or he won't play Llorente. You know, do you know what I mean? He won't start with Torres. He doesn't need to. So that all ties in together in terms of an overall philosophy, I think. But you're absolutely right. The changing of the guard's got to happen now. It's funny for Gerrard because he had a good tournament, you know. But I think even he would concede that it'll be beyond him in 2014.
Yeah.
Terry will have to go. Ferdinand looks like
I mean, Terry was great, and he's... How old was he? 31?
But, yeah. I mean, he's not getting any quicker, is he? And it's becoming increasingly apparent. I know he did have a good tournament, but it's the balls over the top of him are the worry.
True, he's very slow on the turn.
But if he plays
with another quick centre-back...
But, again, that's straight away, that's an austerity measure.
And is he a team player, Marcus? What you just said earlier is the most important thing, is the team needs to work together. I mean, is Terry? I mean, it's a miracle in itself that Hodge has managed to keep Terry quiet for the whole tournament. I mean, Terry's normally shooting off his mouth all the time. So, yeah. I mean, I suppose maybe to that end, he has improved him. But, I mean, is Terry? I mean, look at what he did in the World Cup 2010. You know, I mean, the mutiny he tried to sort of spark off was scandalous.
Credit
really.
To Terry for not doing that, as loath as we all are to give credit to Terry
for being a normal human being.
But you know, Gary Cahill looks like he's going to be a top performer for England. You know, that if you have Terry going into that Brazil setup, it's just taking away someone else's chance, and it's taking away more mobility, more just.
Cahill's like
thinking.
His natural successor, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely.
He seems to be a similar sort of player to him, you know. So, yeah, I think you've got to usher in new players, and you've got to give him a chance, you know. And I respect Hodgson on a level for saying that he wanted to stick and be faithful to the players that got England there. I think that's the right and proper thing to do as far as possible.
Well, exactly.
It's a new start now.
But if he'd have done a bit of a, you know, Villas-Boas and tried to come in and gone, right, you know, you're on a bit, you know, get out, blah, blah, blah. I think it would have unsettled the camp. I think it would have pissed people off, and you can't have that.
But... Also, it's a bit of a different situation from that, because look at the difference between this squad and the squad at the World Cup 2010. You know, it's hugely different. Capello did still do his own overhaul, but it was a lot more gradual than Villas-Boas' supposed attempts to do that.
But if Hodgson, it's
going in the right direction. Yeah. Mm. I mean, for as much as England can possibly do, as we know, England need a youth set-up overhaul. It's apparently happening. It's not going to happen for a generation. Mm. We're not going to win anything until that happens. Let's be realistic. It's just, we've seen what the standard is, you know, with what Spain do. We can't do that. We're beyond that.
I agree with you. It isn't even a case of we're not ever going to win anything. It's a case of that we could potentially fluke a European Championships like Greece did. But I don't even know if that's the thing you should be doing anyway. You should be building a legacy.
It's a bit harsh on Greece as well. They obviously, you know, they set up with a very, very specific plan.
But it was never a sustainable plan. But what I mean is, if England were ever going to win anything, it would be in that way. It wouldn't be in a Spain legacy sort of long way, you know.
But I think, you know, realistically, if England can get the coaching methods in, like we've banged on about and a lot of other people have, you know, get a team, get a bit of more fluid formation, you can turn up at a tournament and play well. Mm. And perhaps avoid, you know, maybe Spain play Germany and they go out and England, you don't have to play them, or you get lucky on the day. You only have to fluke one match, or maybe, you know, maybe two or something, you know.
A big problem as well is it's not just the coaching, but the coach hits. We have a real lack of them.
Well,
there's
a really
small amount of coaches in England compared to in Germany and Spain and everywhere else. And that's another thing that has to change. And it's a difficult one to implement, really, because obviously people need to be going for the jobs and the opportunity. Opportunities need to be there, so that's something else the FA need to look at.
So hit the front man in 2014 is what we're saying. Let's finish off with just a couple of favourite moments. Doesn't have to be goals, moments from the tournament.
Balotelli in the semi-final was a big moment.
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah,
Di Natale against Spain, the only goal Spain conceded
was nice.
Can I throw it out there again? Neuer's diving header.
Yeah, superb. That was Pirlo's Panenka penalty.
Yeah,
against
and Ramos.
Yeah.
I liked Cristiano Ronaldo's like boob squeezing celebration. That seemed to be overlooked.
Oh, in the quarterfinal against Czech Republic.
Yeah, we had enough moments to really hang our hat on this summer. I think we've been really spoiled.
We could do a whole show.
Yeah.
Oh. But we won't, because we've got to leave you. We've got to love you and leave you for a few weeks. We'll be back on the 15th of August, because Euro 2012 is over. But the season will start again.
It'd be very hard to do that show on the 15th of August talking about the Community Shield and the Football League after this. No disrespect to those competitions, but it's a bit of a come down. I'm speaking as a fan of a League One club.
Yeah. Don't have a go at me for that.
No one's going to have a go at you for that. So yes, we are back on the 15th of August, but there is plenty of stuff on the website, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, the website will be completely active and loads of cool things to look at and read and do completely through the summer, so don't neglect it, because we certainly won't be.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's thefootballramble.com, obviously.
And again, and one of my personal highlights of the summer was seeing where FC Start play.
Yeah.
Or played. Really, where they played.
Yeah.
Where they played. So the video's on the website. Make sure you check that out. Jim, you've got some Edinburgh.
You're not
going
to be here for the 15th of August,
I won't be, no. I'll be up in Scotland. I am obviously going up to the Edinburgh Festival this year. I have four more previews left in London if you do want to come down. Luke came down to one the other week. Thank you very much for that, Luke.
It definitely was an above average night. I had an excellent time. It was excellent.
Well, he's improved.
Yeah. get your listening caps on, because the next one is on the 8th of July. That is at the Leicester Square Theatre with Thomas Nelstrup. One after that is the 15th of July. That is at the Pembroke Castle in Chalk Farm. That is with TV's Josh Widdicombe. That is starting early. That is starting at 6 o'clock if you want to come down. After that is the 20th of July. That is at the Regent, which is in North London. That's with Jay Foreman. And the final one before I go to Edinburgh is the 25th of July, Queen's Head Piccadilly Circus. That is with Nish Kumar. All of those are free, and tickets for the actual Edinburgh show, if you go into the Fringe, are available at underbelly.co.uk. Thank you for listening. I've been speaking for ages.
Hasn't he just? That's it, boys. So if you, of course, if you want to get in touch with us over the summer for whatever reason, the email address is show@thefootballramble.com, and of course the website thefootballramble.com, which we just spoke about. Say goodbye, Jim.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. See you on the 15th of August.
Thank you for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.